What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Today on Sticks In, we are breaking down the latest in the Inside Lacrosse Top 20 Media Poll, College Lacrosse, and we're talking some of the results from this past weekend as we go. Conference tournaments right around the corner. Plus, speaking of postseason stuff, the NLL is down to one last weekend of regular season play before the postseason. We have some more results from last weekend there that will help us shape the playoff picture a little bit. It is coming down to the final week of the season indoors, so we'll take a look at that and talk about everything on tap there and going forward. If you are liking the podcast, please do subscribe, like, download, all that good stuff that your podcast platform allows you to do. And thank you again for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks in Lacrosse. My name is Dan Arestia, and I'm happy you're here. I hope everyone had themselves a wonderful weekend. Happy Tuesday to you. Just a glorious time for lacrosse right now. If high school lacrosse is your thing, there's banger games on deck this week, every week, particularly up near me in Connecticut right now. We got, Darien and Staples, two public schools here, are among the best in the nation. They both have St. Anthony's this week, so you know it's a great week for high school lacrosse here in the Northeast. If college is your thing, there's maybe one or two games left for basically everyone, one or maybe two, before we get into the conference tournaments, and that means postseason play is basically here. So it's time to glue yourself, as I do, to Lax Reference, to that RPI page, to start getting your story straight for Selection Sunday. Start getting that argument ready if you're a little worried about your squad, if you're not a Duke fan. The bubble is forming, and I think there will be more of a bubble this year. Last year, I don't really think there was one. You know, by the end of the conference tournaments, particularly really by the end of the Ivy tournament, it felt like a pretty clear and obvious field. Not a lot of weird questions. It would have been like extraordinarily strange for anyone other than the teams that got in to get in last year. Obviously, the year before was a little bit different. It was a little weirder, you know. Committee skipped out of Notre Dame, they put in Harvard, all that kind of stuff. I think we're closer to having that kind of year than we are to having last year right now. I think the water can still get muddier, but we still have conference tournaments to play, so we have all of that to change our minds between now and then. Speaking of the playoffs, let's just real quick before we get back to the college stuff, let's touch on the pros. Let's go out indoors. Excuse me, we're not going outdoors, this is the NLL, we're going indoors. The NLL weekend wrapped up, a few more tickets punched, a couple more seasons ended. Buffalo beat Calgary over the weekend in front of, they sold out. It was a 19,000 plus person crowd in Bandit Land. I have no excuse. I have to get to Buffalo for a game next season. I don't think I can make it this year. I have to get there next season and see a Bandits game in Buffalo. It's just, I can't imagine what it's like. I don't see anything else at any level across the rivals what you see on screen when you watch a Bandits game, particularly one of that magnitude, because the Bandits are at home. A win officially clinches a playoff spot for them. You know, they're defending champs. Those fans are nuts. The stars aligned for the right kind of atmosphere. That's the kind of game I need to go up and see a Bandits game, like, you know, next year at some point. Because you really can't expect anything less from them at this point. That's just where they have the bar set in Buffalo. So, as we said, the win there locks up a spot in the postseason for Buffalo. The loss itself, losing the game didn't end Calgary, but the results, I think, from the rest of the weekend did. So that loss, Calgary was still technically alive after they lost the game, but the results from the rest of the weekend officially knocked Calgary out of the playoff race. So the Roughnecks will not be in the postseason indoors. So that kind of brings the current state of affairs to this. Toronto, one seed, San Diego, Albany, Buffalo, Georgia, Halifax have locked up playoff spots. Halifax kind of backed into one this weekend. The results locked them up, even though they didn't play. As we said, Buffalo, their win locked theirs up, so they joined those other four, and that gives us six teams that are officially in. On the sadder side of things, Vegas was already out, but Vegas, Colorado, Philly, Rochester, and Calgary, I believe now, are all been eliminated. I think none of them can make the playoffs now. That leaves four teams, Panther City, Vancouver, Saskatchewan, and New York, to battle for the final two playoff spots. So musical chairs here with four players and two seats. Looking ahead, I guess, a little bit here, but New York has what will be, I mean, technically I can't guarantee you this, but look, it's probably going to be their last game on Long Island as a franchise this weekend. It's their last regular season game for sure. If they were to make the playoffs and like run all the way to the finals, and the finals goes three games, one of those is in New York, so I can't tell you that it's their last game ever at Nassau Coliseum. It's probably going to be, though. And it's kind of sad. I mean, I finally, as I found myself over my last couple of years here, really trying to latch on more to the NLL and really falling in love with the indoor game and coming to enjoy it, it was nice to me to have the Riptide there on Long Island, because they're the closest team to me in Connecticut. Even when Connecticut had a team, we had the Black Wolves play. They played up at Mohegan Sun, and that trip for me is not really a shorter trip than going to Long Island. The Riptide still would have probably been my closer team, even if the Black Wolves were still here. So, I'm a little sad that they'll be gone, because the closest games to me now will be in Albany, will be in Philadelphia. Ugh. Not that I don't like those cities, but man, that's a rough ride to go for one regular season game here and there. The idea of go to a game and come home in the same day, it takes a big hit when the games are that far away. So New York's, it will probably be their final game at Nassau Coliseum. Again, not mathematically, but probably. They host the Firewolves. With a win, New York is in really good position for a playoff appearance. It would be their first and their final season, of course. It's not a win and in situation. There's tiebreaker scenarios. There's obviously, like I said, there's three other teams playing for those two spots along with New York. But a win, obviously, is what they want to do. If they lose, it starts to get dire. I think if they and all other three teams that are still alive, if they all lose too, I think New York gets the A spot. I got to go play with, I've been playing with Graham Pirro's NLL stats playoff scenario generator machine with all these win-loss things. I mean, the scenarios and everything, whatever poor fella over there at the NLL office is figuring them all out and putting them into some graphic for social, God bless you. You're earning your pay this week. My goodness, it's not easy. I won't pretend to... I think even if I could, in a podcast format, I don't think it would be easy enough to follow for me to like say out loud all the things that need to happen for each team to make the playoff. It's a lot. So I think that's what makes this last week great. It's what's going to make this last week a lot of fun, is you'll be flipping from game to game, watching result after result to see which two are going to be standing when it's over. I believe I saw, and I think it's true, I think the final standings for the regular season, which will impact who drafts first overall, who makes the playoffs, all that stuff. It's all going to literally come down to the last game on Sunday this weekend. I think I saw Graham mention that. Literally the last minute of the regular season will decide where teams finish, which is as good as you can ask for in pro sports, period, from a regular season. That every game down to the last one still matters. So, as I said, New York really needs to win if they want to make it. It becomes a little bit too hairy to try and make it to back in if you lose. They're hosting an Albany team that is now on a six-game losing streak. Albany is trending in the wrong direction. They have the playoff spot locked up. Albany's going. But, man, going into the playoffs, if they lose to New York, they'll be going into the playoffs on a seven-game L streak. That is about the worst kind of mojo you can have. But New York hosting a team on a losing streak with a playoff spot probably on the line in the last game they may ever have in that building, the last regular season game for sure. The atmosphere should be good. I hope people show up. I'm going to go out. I'm going to be there. I would not miss this. But that's kind of that's the first of the games to watch over the weekend. We'll talk more about these on the Friday episode too. But next, you know, Vancouver. I don't think you can say enough about Vancouver, man. Their turnaround has been unbelievable to me. They were on March 1st, before they played their game on March 1st, they were 2-8. 2-8. Bottom of the league, bottom of the power rankings. Everybody thought, look, young team, Coach Malowski's first year, you know, they're building, it's, you know, whatever, chalk this one up to a rebuild, all that. They've gone 6-1 since, and they can still make the playoffs this weekend. they can win. Look, they got to go to San Diego and play in Pechanga. It's a tough way to end the regular season. They got to if they want to make the postseason, I think they have to win in San Diego. They probably do. I have to look at the tiebreaker scenarios again. Again, all these teams, they want to go win their last game. But they can still make the playoffs. They are playing with fire. They are playing with energy. It's a young team that's confident, and you can see what a difference the confidence makes for them when they're coming out on the right side of these games rather than the wrong side, and they're stringing good performances together. You can just, if you've been watching Vancouver, you can see how much that lifts a team. Even if the talent isn't always as good as everybody else's in the league, just playing with that kind of fire and that edge, that confidence to know that like everybody else isn't invincible. We might be young, we might still be putting things together a little bit, but we can do this. You can see how it's lifted them. I think right now, look, San Diego, they play bad. They put a poor performance on tape against the Rush a week ago. No other way to slice it. And playing poorly down the stretch, as we just said with Albany, is not where you want to be. I think the Seals had effort and everything, but they looked like, you know, they just didn't have their best game. And right now, if you leave the door open just a crack for Vancouver, they are kicking it in. So Vancouver, San Diego in San Diego this weekend, that'll be a good one. They get kind of first crack at all this stuff at starting the whole dominoes and starting the mess because that game is Friday night. That's the Friday night like West Coast game. So if you're into the lax after dark, that is a hell of a lax after dark game. We got Panther City. They helped their cause with a win last week. They sit at 9-8, but they are not fully locked in yet. They closed the year with a visit to Calgary, who's been eliminated. And I think playing spoiler, I think ending someone else's season, I think that's a powerful motivator. I think that'll be a good game. And then you got the Rush, who are hosting Toronto to close the year. Probably the tallest task of the four teams is having to have the Rush come to your building. But look, the Rush, we're up to it against San Diego a week ago. Can they deal with the Rock? It's a tough back-to-back to close the season. San Diego 1 week and then the Rock the next week to try and make the playoffs. But the Rush have been playing well. Ciliano had a great week against the Seals, against his former team. So you get a hot goalie and they shoot the ball well. Saskatchewan does. So, you know, you get a good performance. Hey, we'll see what happens. But look, I won't try and do the if this team wins and this team and this team and this. It's too hard to do, and a podcast format for it is not a winner. So, I would say, you know, if you're looking for info on this, if you're not following Graham Perreault and if you're not following Ty Merrow and those and Adam Levi and those guys who do such an awesome job with the NLL stat stuff. And Teddy Jenner and Greggy Peck Gregoire, you got to be on social following those guys, and they'll have the scenarios for you. The LaxMag guys, like, they'll have all the scenarios for you broken out. My brain is not strong enough for this kind of thing. I'm too new to box lacrosse, and I'm too bad at math. They will have you helped out. You should find those guys on social media and follow them, because they will take you through the permutations of the way those four teams can figure it out this weekend. Or you can just watch the games, enjoy them, and if you have no dog in the fight, enjoy the madness and the high-stakes lacrosse, and just see what happens when the dust settles on Sunday night, Monday morning. Either way, you're having a good time. That's the pro world. Let's do a little college lax. Let's do a little new top 20 this week, following a weekend of some pretty good games. As always, we will do this via, we'll go through my media ballot here that I send in on Sunday night, and I will drop in where the team that I voted for came in the actual poll, and then I'll give you their RPI as we go through as well. So again, this is my media ballot, and I'll give you where they actually came in the poll. At number one, obviously you figured it out by now if you've seen the poll, is Notre Dame. They were unanimous number one this week. Given the results of the weekend, that felt pretty obvious to me, pretty easy to me. They're also number one in the RPI, and we'll say it off the top, the RPI and the media poll have zero to do with one another, and a team being in one place in one thing does not mean it should be anywhere near that place in the other. The two just work too differently. One is done with computers and math and everything from the 1970s, and one is done with media folks like me watching games and saying this is what's real and what's not. So, you know, put your faith in what you want. Notre Dame played the kind of game I sort of thought they'd play with Cornell, I think. Notre Dame just scored the last goal. Ironically, to me, the key play in this game was the one at the end that was a defensive play. Jordan Faison, of all people, he causes a turnover in the game's closing moments and really denies Cornell a final attempt at goal and creates the opportunity for the Irish to score it. For, I believe it was Ben Ramsey who hit the 18th goal that put the Irish up. So I thought, you know, that's kind of the critical moment, is the Jordan Faison caused turnover. 18 goals for the Irish, but nobody on the team had more than three. They got points from all over the place. And, you know, I thought this game had playoff atmosphere too, I will say. It felt pretty electric, pretty exciting. I think Notre Dame looks ready for anybody. They look ready for anybody and for any kind of game. They handled haymakers from Cornell. They bounced back. They threw shots of their own. They made the plays they needed to make to win the game. It looked like championship lacrosse from the Irish. It just did. I know repeating is hard, but it looked like championship lacrosse from them. They play UNC next weekend. We'll see if the Heels can shock the world in the regular season. At number two, I have Duke. Again, matching the final poll here, Duke was in the two in the poll, two in my ballot. They're also two in the RPI. They beat UVA this week. Pretty convincing, 18-12. I thought Brennan O'Neill was dominant in this game. I will see if that kind of quiets people down about him. I have a feeling the he disappears talk will persist until Memorial Day, until June, if he makes it that far. Or he has some kind of massive game in a playoff loss or something. I don't know. But it's tough to imagine him doubting or silencing the critics at this point, because it's just how people are, I guess. But I thought he was a tone setter in this one for sure. I thought he would look like he was shot out of a cannon. He slowed down a little bit late, but that's kind of just something that happens against Jurassic Park. But I thought he definitely set the tone for this game for Duke. I think they win because of the way he played out of the gate. Duke has now beaten UVA, I think I have this right, 18 straight times. It's got to be one of the more ridiculous stats in lacrosse. One of the most ridiculous streaks I've ever heard of, that Duke has beaten this UVA team 18 straight times. UVA has been a national champion in that time. they live in the top five. They live in the top three. They have some all-time great players on their roster right now, and they have plenty of times the last half a decade, and they just can't beat Duke. I don't get it. I don't know. That's a weird one to me. But yeah, Duke extends the streak, so I have Duke at number two. At number three, I have Hopkins. Still matching the final poll here, where Hop came in at three. They were three last week, and they won, so they didn't really give anybody any reason to drop them. They're also three in the RPI. So right now, my ballot, the media poll, and the RPI all match so far, which is stunner, I guess. I don't know. Hopkins had to work for it this week. Ohio State will do that to you. They will make you work for it. The Buckeyes defense gave them issues, particularly early on, I thought. Regulation, not enough in this one. It was again OT, and it was again Matt Collison for Hopkins. The power on display on his game winner. He's soaking a big lift from his defender. His defender's got his shoulder into Matt's like core. He's clearly pushing him off the dodge a little bit, and he still just fires a shot through his defender, basically across his body to a far pipe to beat Caleb Fayok, who had had a great game in that one. I thought that was a really kind of special effort, a goal at the end, and a testament to just how strong Matt Collison is. The result sets up a gem. Hopkins, Maryland at Homewood in the regular season finale for the Big Ten regular season crown. That's good stuff right there. The only thing I would change about it is I would love it if that was the primetime game. It's the 4 o'clock game on Saturday. I believe it's on ESPNU. The only game you can imagine ahead of it that makes it that's the game taking the primetime slot is, of course, the game. Ohio State, Michigan is the primetime BTN game this weekend, but Hopkins, Maryland's going to be a good one. Homewood's going to be bumping. At number four, I have Virginia. Again, still matching the poll here. Still 4-for-4 here so far. It's stunning to me to see Nunes, I think, got chased early in that game, which I couldn't remember the last time that happened, but that's what that Duke offense can do. You look just at the box score in the game. UVA's defense conceded 14 points to the Duke attack. That's never going to be a method or a recipe for success against Duke, is if their attack is scoring like crazy. That's how they want to do things. So Duke was able to do, it looked like, for what it wanted to do for enough of the game there. UVA could not capitalize much in the faceoff game. Even, you know, Naso got hurt in that game and missed a little bit of time before he came back. And he came back and he clearly wasn't 100%. But UVA could not turn that into a faceoff advantage, at least not one consistent enough, I think, to make a real difference. UVA basically not getting the A game from those spots, and those are spots where they usually get the A game, was a little surprising. They sit at 5 in the RPI. They're going to the tournament. They have 2 games left in their regular season. They have Q's this week, so another good test there for them, particularly, you know, where you kind of, I think, want to play Q's the same kind of way. You want to limit that attack, and as good as Q's as midfield can be, you want to make sure that, you know, if the Q's attack has 14 points, Virginia's probably going to lose again. But that's where they can look to change things and turn things up. At number 5, I have Maryland. I'm matching the poll 5-for-5. The Terps are at 6 in the RPI, and as we said, a great game this week as they're going to clash with old rival Hopkins for Big Ten regular season crown. I believe I have that right. Terps have won 3 straight. They're doing it grinding people down. They beat Rutgers like 11-6 this week. That's like a 1997 score right there. Luke Weirman has been very good for them late. And again, I said it on the pod last week, but I think Maryland kind of goes as he goes. Their defense can be suffocating, though. Look, and the score lines, are they sexy? Absolutely not. But they're wins. And Maryland is somebody that I see them picking up steam, getting the locomotive going. I don't think anybody wants to see this team right now. I know you look at them and you look down the roster and you're just like, none of these guys really scare me all that much on offense, maybe. I don't know. Some solid players out there. Nobody who's, we don't have a Twarton guy this year or anything. I don't think anybody wants to see this team. You just don't. You just don't want to see a John Tillman team that's picking up steam right now. At number 6, I have the Q's. I am 6-for-6 matching the poll so far. Not fun at all. The Q's are 7 in the RPI. Also feeling pretty tournament safe to me at this point. They were up 10-4 in the third quarter of this game against UNC, and they won 10-9. They did not score a fourth quarter goal. I don't know if that's the Orange's first scoreless quarter of the year. I did not go and look. I would bet if it's not the first, it's one of close to the first. Orange fans were probably looking for a step on the throat kind of moment from their team in that game and not to let them back into the game kind of moment. So, you know, they didn't get what they wanted there. But look, conference win is a conference win. They beat UNC. Syracuse closes the regular season next week against UVA. I believe that's in the dome. Pat March will be back with the team there. I think that makes a difference for sure. I thought Spallina cooked UNC without March on the sideline. So, you know, but they'll need their OC back if they're going to get a They're going to need a guide through Jurassic Park there. So, Q's Virginia this weekend. Q's again at 6. At number 7, finally, I deviate from the poll a little bit. I have Yale at 7 after they kind of survived that early scare and still put a 20 spot on Dartmouth. They came in at 8 in the final poll. They're also 8 in the RPI. It's funny how close this top 10 is to the RPI top 10. Matt Brandau scored over 20 points in 2 games last week. I want to make sure I phrase that correctly. Matt Brandau had 20 total points in 2 games. So his 2 games combined scored 20 plus points. He didn't have 20 points twice. I'm bad at this. Anyway, the production for Brandau is staggering to me. I will continue to disclaim his production every week by saying he has not played with Leo Johnson, Chris Lyons, or Brad Sharp all year. Those guys are not playing this season. They are in some order Yale's second, third, and fourth best offensive players, offensive weapons, maybe. And they aren't playing. And Brandau is up at like 7 points a game. It's unreal what he's doing. Yale has 3 games left, including a date today. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, they are out on the island against Hofstra. Tuesday for the Hunter. Can the Pride knock off Yale? I don't know. We'll see. But then they have Albany, and then they have Princeton. Brandau should be able to pile up some numbers there. To host the Ivy League tournament, they'll need to beat Princeton pretty good. I think, you got to look at the tiebreakers. It comes down to head-to-head matchups, and it comes down to... I think after head-to-head matchup, like the amount you beat a team by, the goals differential kind of thing or something like that, becomes a tiebreaker in the Ivy League tournament standings. So, like, who's going to host is going to come down to that kind of thing. It could. Yale really needs, if they want to host, is for Cornell to lose to Harvard or, God bless them, to Dartmouth. We'll see if that happens. At number 8, I have Denver. Final poll has Denver at 7. I could see it, so I flip-flopped where the final poll had Yale and Denver. I could see Denver and Yale going 7-8 for most people. I have them in this order because Yale has a win over Denver. Yale beat them, so it was an easy way for me to kind of decide who I should put 7 and 8. Yale won the game between the two, so Yale 7, Denver 8. Denver is up to 4 in the RPI. They beat Georgetown this week by 2 goals, so their resume is looking strong. They've won 3 straight. They've got 2 to go, 1 against Providence, 1 against Marquette. Providence been kind of frisky lately. It's not exactly a cupcake ride for Denver here. The Pios are not overwhelming people, but they are doing enough to win. They look like a team that just knows how to win games. And that's not an easy thing to do. I realize it's like not super analytical and it's kind of old school and nebulous and all that. And I'm not always a big fan of those things, but there's something to be said for being a team that knows how to win, to how to close out games like they won the game against Georgetown. Gutting one out against the Hoyas like they did, that doesn't happen for younger teams or for a less experienced coaching staff. And I think that's what makes the Pios dangerous right now, is experience and knowing how to close out games like that one. At number 9, I have Georgetown here. I did not drop the Hoyas too much for the Denver loss. I kept them in the top 10 here. The final poll has them at 11. They're also 11 in the RPI. Denver snapped the Georgetown win streak at 8 games. So the Hoyas won 8 straight and then take that L. They have remaining games against St. John's and Villanova. Like Denver, Hoyas well-coached, senior-heavy, experienced group. But I would love to see them kind of turn that into the deep tournament run. This year would be great, but we'll kind of see if they can do that. They were upset by Delaware in one of their better years. They spend these seasons living in the top 10, and then they're watching from home Memorial Day weekend. I want to see them break through. I'm a Graham Bundy fan. I feel like he's had an exceptional college career that hasn't gotten enough notoriety as award, as decorated as it's been. He's going to be a high PLL draft pick. I want his career to end on a good note. So Georgetown here I have at 9. At 10, I have Penn State. That matches where Penn State is in the final poll. The Nittany Lions are 9 in the RPI. They beat up Michigan pretty good this week, held them to 8 goals, snaps a 2-game losing streak. Both those were close losses, so you know that feels good for Penn State to get that Big Ten win, snap that streak. They end the regular season with a trip to Rutgers. I don't know if there's a team in the nation who can lean on the "we have unfinished business" angle more than Penn State can. They were sent home. I mean, we all remember. They were sent home last year. by a call that actually forced a rule change, which hilariously the Big Ten did not adopt. I mean, come on, can't even script it. But I don't, I feel like I don't see, or I don't, I guess maybe I don't even just feel it. I don't feel the unfinished business part of Penn State when I watch them. Like last year, when you watched Notre Dame play, you saw a team that looked pissed that the committee took an opportunity from them the year before. They looked like they were out to kill everybody. And I don't see a killer in Penn State right now. Doing the old, you know, Logan Roy, I'm sorry. You're not a killer. Penn State does not look like they're out for blood the same way that Notre Dame did last year. Maybe they'll find that gear. Maybe they'll bring that now that we're getting towards postseason play and it's like we're not letting our postseason end that way. Not this year. We'll see. But I feel like during the course of the season, I mean, I'm not saying they're playing bad. They're playing well. They're a really good team. I've been high on Penn State. I'm bullish on them, the whole thing. But I don't see a killer right now. I don't know. I'm waiting to see a killer in Penn State. At 11, I have Cornell. Final poll has them at 9. So not a giant drop for them after losing to number 1. We basically kind of talked through some of that game a little bit already and what I thought was the key play. Cornell is 10 in the RPI. As I see it, and look, to understand the Ivy League tournament scenarios right now, I started touching on it a little bit with Yale, but I mean, you need an Ivy League degree just to understand who's going to host the Ivy League tournament. I swear to God. Cornell, as I see it, though, still has the inside track on hosting. So I think if they go win-win, I think Cornell is going to be your likely host. CJ Kirst has been unbelievably good all year. It was masterful again against Notre Dame. But I'm finding myself more and more with Cornell tuning in to watch these two freshmen on this team, man. Firth and Goldstein. I mean, Firth wears 51. It's easy to take a little trip down memory lane back to another 51 at Cornell when you watch him. And I know how high of a praise that is, and I still don't hesitate to give it. That's how good Firth is. And look, Goldstein is an ankle-breaking dodge away from SportsCenter at all times. His quickness is electric. Electric footwork from him. The pair of them, man, are they fun. I'm finding myself, again, Kirst is going to be the guy who sells the tickets there, and he's going to go... You know, he's going to get drafted into two pro leagues. He's an unbelievable player. He's their most valuable player. He should be a Tewarton finalist. But I find when I turn on Cornell now, I'm really excited to watch these two freshmen play. They're really having good years. Big Red have Harvard and Dartmouth left. If they can hold serve, I believe they will host, and they'll be in obviously a good spot for the NCAA, for the big dance positioning when that comes around. At number 12, I have Army. They beat Navy over the weekend, so they just kind of hold. They were 12 last week. I still have them 12 this week, and they did the same in the final poll, 12 there. They're 14 in the RPI. I really don't think that matters. I think it's league title or bust for Patriot League squads. That's a one-bid league, so win it or watch from home. I was on hand for Army-Navy this year. I did go because it was up at Mikey Stadium in West Point. I was there with over 10,000 other people, the biggest crowd for a game yet this spring. For anybody, Division I men's lacrosse, biggest crowd of any game so far this spring, which was very cool. I was impressed by Army and their intensity to see it in person. Coletti is such a tone setter for them, but they really got an excellent game from their goalie, from Sean Byrne, who's a sophomore, who had 19 saves. I think Army is still a team that's got the personnel and is equipped to beat anyone, and I think Alberici will always have them mentally ready to compete. They're always going to be ready to compete. Patriot League, as I said over the weekend, man, they live to get radical. Like, with this result, with the Army-Navy result, and then the results of the rest of the weekend, there are 6 teams in the Patriot League who have a 4-2 conference record. Out of 9 teams, 6 of them are 4-2. I don't know, man. How that shakes out, I can't, you know, the scenario's there and all that. It's not even worth examining them. Just watch the games. They're good. Everybody's good in the Patriot League. Army has dates with Bucknell and Loyola left, and I mean this sincerely when I say it. I mean this. I really do mean it. I have no idea what's going to happen in the Patriot League. None. And neither does anyone else. That's why it's the Patriot League. I have no clue. You don't. Anybody who tells you they do, they're selling something. Nobody knows what's going on with this league. 13. I got the Quakers. I have Penn. in the final poll, they climb just a little bit, and they are also at 13 there after they beat Harvard. They're 12 in the RPI. It was a tight one they played with Harvard. I know three-goal final score, and even that, it was closer than that. They were battling this one. Penn also, I mean, it doesn't matter for the poll or postseason or anything. They finally hit an over in a game. Something of a miracle. It's their first over of the season. Just one game left. I thought they were going to go the whole regular season without hitting one, but they have one game left now in the regular season. They are at Princeton. A win there kind of puts the pressure on Yale and Cornell to keep pace, again, for you Ivy League math majors to figure out seeding there. That's a big one for them. So I have Penn at 13, where they match the final poll. At 14, I have Harvard. I did not ding Harvard a lot for their loss. The pollsters did. The other voters did. Other voters dropped them because they came in the final poll at 18. So me having them at 14, I'm going to bring them up a little bit, I guess. But I thought playing the way they did against Penn warranted a small drop for losing, but like that's it. Harvard is 17 in the RPI. They'll need an Ivy League title at this point. I think they've lost four or five since they started 6-0. And the one win in there is Dartmouth. So, you know, sorry, Big Green, but I'm not putting a ton of stock in that. The games are all close. They just can't get quite over the hump in them. And honestly, I'm not trying to make excuses for them. It's the difference between being fully healthy and not, in my eyes. I'm just being honest. They're just missing guys who are so important. Or guys who are banged up and playing with through injuries that are so important. And at this point, when you start the year without those guys, you start the year with a short bench, as the year goes on, it just snowballs. It compounds and it catches up to you because those short benches, it means your guys are just a little more fatigued and you don't get to recover quite as much. You don't get to clear up some of that soreness in time. And that kind of, it just carries over from week to week and compounds throughout the year. So, you know, you hope Harvard can kind of have some success here if they want to make the Ivy League tournament. They have Cornell and Brown left. They need wins, those. They need wins in those games. At 15, I have Towson. Towson is the first in, there's kind of a trio of squads that fits together here. I have them at 15 in the final poll. Has them at 14, so I have them one spot back. Me having Harvard as high as I do kind of pushes other teams down, I guess. They just keep winning, though. Towson does. They're just really good. DeMeo, Weischer, they're really good. Tigers have won five straight. Look, do I move them up in the poll because they beat Hampton up this week? No. They climb just because they're good enough to be there. And because, you know, there's losses and madness ahead of them, so they climb up and fill spots. They're 21 in the RPI. It does not matter. They are in a one-bid league. They're in the CAA. It's going to come down to them in Delaware. They have Monmouth next before their regular season closer, which is at the Hens. So I have Towson at 15. Final poll has them 14. At 16, I have Richmond. I caved. I did it. I did it mostly because I really wanted to drop Princeton, BU, and Colgate pretty hard for their results this week. And I was kind of filling the space ahead of those where I wanted to have those teams, where I thought those teams deserved to be. And Richmond so kind of fills those gaps. Richmond's measurables are still very good. I get it. A grinded out game against High Point, that's not nothing. High Point's not a pushover. They ain't Duke. They ain't a pushover, though. Richmond's now... it's funny. Again, the gambling part of this stuff and the spreads and all that don't actually matter for any of this. But when Richmond is the favorite, they're 8-0. When they're the underdog, they're 0-4. Not against the spread, straight up. When they're the favorite, they are 8-0. They do not lose when they're playing somebody they're better than. And everybody knows they're better. When they're an underdog, they're 0-4. When everybody knows they're not going to win, or when everybody knows the other team is probably better than they are, they lose. But they take care of business, man. They still got to be that 8-0. So they're 24 in the RPI. The A-10 winner is the one who goes. I think it'll come down to them in St. Joe's, in my opinion, in the conference. So Richmond, I have at 16. BU, I dropped to 17. They fell all the way down to 20 in the final poll after losing to Lafayette, to unranked Lafayette this week in a buzzer beater. As I said, I wanted to drop them a pretty good ways for losing to Lafayette because that's honestly what I think deserves to have happen to you. I think if you play that game against Lafayette 10 times, I think BU wins 9 of them. But that's why you play, because this was number 10. I said last week the Terriers look scary. I stand by it. I guess scary in all possible scenarios, but they're part of that six teams that are 4-2 in the Patriot League I mentioned when we were talking Army. So it's not like this loss sinks them. And their path to the NCAA is still win the Patriot League. So, I mean, I guess these games, I shouldn't make light of it, but like the games don't have quite the same weight. We know they got to win the league. Does losing to Lafayette really matter in that regard? Not a ton. It matters in terms of where they're going to be in the Patriot League tournament and seeding and all that. But in terms of will that keep them out of the NCAA tournament? No, they got to win the Patriot League anyway. They visit a Lehigh team this week that just beat Colgate. That's a tough one. The talent on the offense can win for them in that game. You get a sneaky pro-level matchup in that game, too, with Pat Morrison and Scott Cole. So BU-Lehigh will be a good one. But as I said, with Army, I have no idea what's going to happen in the Patriot League. Nobody does. Nobody knows. At 18, I have St. Joe's. My Hawks just keep winning. If BU didn't have a head-to-head over them, I'd put them higher. I would have put St. Joe's above BU here. I probably could anyway. Of course I can. I'm voting. I can do whatever the hell I want to do. But you could probably justify it anyway. February 6th when they won the game was, it's like 30 years ago at this point. But it's now 8 in a row for the Hawks. They beat Hobart this week. They came in the final poll at 16. I love that for them. That somehow I have them, usually it's the other way around. I have them higher than where they actually come in. For me to underrate St. Joe's means I'm having a good time. They have a sneaky good RPI of 13, but I think it would take a rapture level miracle to get them into the at large. So they need to win the A-10, as I said, and I think it's coming down to them in Richmond. 19, I have Princeton. Tigers have to take a big fall. They lost to a one-win team. I don't mean to disrespect you, Brown, but look, that's a one-win team. Princeton cannot lose that game and have me continue to really rank them in a way that's indicative that they're one of the better teams in the country. I would not be stunned if some pollsters drop Princeton altogether. I have them at 19. The poll has them at 17. Princeton's RPI is now 19. The loss to Brown drops them to 2-2 in conference with remaining games against Penn and Yale. They are flirting with missing the Ivy League tournament if Harvard plays well down the stretch here. And if that happens, no postseason. You're done. It's wild how quickly just one weekend can swing things. We would not be... It doesn't feel like we were having that conversation about Princeton a week ago. But Bruno... Bruno landed a big punch there. They may have severely hindered Princeton's chances at the big dance. We'll see. Tough to fathom, but here we are. Again, it's why we play the games. Princeton needs to shake it off, and they host Penn on Saturday. At 20, I have Delaware. The Hens have won 4 straight. The Stony Brook win, I think, is a solid win. I know Stony Brook's record is not great, but they do have some talent. They are a decent team. Final poll has Delaware at 19, so I have them here at 20. Their RPI is 28. Who cares? They have to win the CAA. They're talented enough to knock off ranked teams. They just haven't had a ton on the schedule, to be honest, because they're in conference play in the CAA. With all the mayhem around them in this part of the poll, I think a spot just kind of opened up, and I thought Delaware was a good candidate for it. I don't know if that was the rationale of other voters, but I think they've earned it. I think they've played their way back in. I think it's coming down to, as I said, the Hens or Towson, the CAA, so all eyes will be on the last game of the regular season there in a couple of weeks for that one to see kind of who's going to have the edge in going into the tournament. Also receiving votes in the poll, I usually break this out into the teams I considered or didn't consider, but because it's so crowded this week, my goodness, 12 teams qualified for receiving votes section this week. I think that's the biggest group of the year. It's the biggest one I could remember. I didn't go back and look, but everyone I considered or would have thought about to put in the top 20 as I was doing it is in the group. So we'll just kind of go through everybody. This is the kind of thing that I think can happen when you have so many of these surprise results at the bottom. When Colgate, BU, and Princeton all lose to unranked teams, it makes some room for voters to throw new squads in at the bottom, and you get a lot of these teams qualifying that way. So this is everybody who got receiving votes this week. I'll just mention them and what I thought. Colgate was receiving votes this week. As we said, they lost this week against Lehigh. Patriot League, nobody knows. Colgate now sits at 7-5. They have wins over Army and Penn State, and they have losses to Navy and Lehigh. I mean, it's as Patriot League as it gets, man. They're one of those 4-2 teams like everybody else. They're 4-2 in the Patriot League. They have an RPI of 18. I don't know. I thought they're probably in my 21-22 neighborhood. I was right there on Colgate, but I did not rank them. Michigan was in receiving votes. They lost to Penn State this week. They now have an RPI of 16. I don't know what the basis is for ranking them right now. I don't know. I didn't really consider Michigan. I ranked them last week, but then they lost again. So, if I dropped them, obviously, and I don't know. I don't see them as a top 20 team right now. Ohio State, they lose the heartbreaker in OT to Hopkins. Back-to-back losses now, both by a goal to Maryland and Hop. That's just brutal for Ohio State. That's the difference between two back-to-back one-goal losses against Maryland and Hop. That's the difference between where they are, 6-7 overall, 1-3 in conference, and being 8-5, or whatever it would be, 8-6, 8-5, whatever, and 3-1 in conference. That math's probably wrong. Being two games better right now. And then we're all saying, look out for the Buckeyes, man. They're on the right side of one-goal games in those two. Everybody is saying the Buckeyes are hot at the right time. I still think with a defense as good as Ohio State's is, they can be dangerous. I think ranking Ohio State is not crazy. If you're ranking Richmond on the strength of they play so well even when they lose against these great teams, you can apply the same thing to Ohio State. Because they play well enough to win some of these games. They do. They really do. Michigan, Rutgers, both 1-3 in conference. I think that's right. So that bottom of that Big Ten is kind of a mess. But Ohio State, I did not rank, but I could see somebody ranking them. Navy was in receiving votes this week. They fought back from an early hole against Army, but Army then, the Knights pull away late. Mids have an RPI of 26. They are, you guessed it, 4-2 in the Patriot League. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Rutgers, I ranked them last week. I did not rank them this week. They only scored 6 goals, I think, in that loss to Maryland. They've lost 3 of 4. Again, like the gambling metrics and that kind of stuff does not matter for this, and it's not something I actually use when I vote. But Rutgers has gone under in 10 straight. NASCAR. The NASCAR offense, the get up and down, let's run, go D to O and score goals under in 10 straight games. It's just not the same kind of team right now. There's just something that's like, stuck in neutral with them. But Rutgers was receiving votes. I did not rank them. Villanova, I did not consider ranking Villanova this week at all. I considered each of those teams we already mentioned or teams I would have put on ahead of Villanova. So they beat St. John's this week. Okay, cool. I haven't been high on them much this year. I made that clear. Like, is Villanova definitely better than the 20 teams I gave you when I actually did the ranking, but also Colgate, Michigan, Ohio State, Navy, Rutgers? Villanova is better than all those teams? Or deserving to be in the mix with all those teams? I don't think so. Right? All right, now they're not. So I did not rank Villanova. I guess I could see it. If you think they're fighting through the Big East and they've got some decent wins, then okay, but I don't know. I'm not high on them. Sacred Heart receiving votes. I am so sad I am not one of the people who voted for Sacred Heart. If you put them on a field with Delaware right now, I think Delaware wins. But there's nobody hotter in lacrosse than Sacred Heart. 9 in a row. They beat Canisius this week. They're going to be at 10 straight to close the regular season. And they are demolishing people. Demolishing people. The Pios are a team I find time to watch them basically every weekend now. I try and find a little bit of screen time to make sure I flip on their game for at least a little bit. You gotta watch them. They're playing with confidence. You can see the way they move on the field. You can literally observe a team that's confident that knows they're going to win. It's fun to watch. So Sacred Heart was receiving votes and they deserve to. I will rank them next week if they win again. Like, full on, I absolutely am ranking them next week. Albany got votes this week. I really didn't consider Albany much. They beat NJIT this week. They beat Yale this week, and I'll rank them for sure. Not, I don't think I can rank them right now, though. I think they're a sub-500 team right now. So, like, if you think they're a top 20 team, but they're not 500, they have a losing record. I don't know. I don't know what the metric is that makes them top 20 right now. I love their players. They're fun to watch. Another team that where they have players that I will tune in to watch play. But I don't think they're a top 20 team right now. But they were receiving votes too. I did not really consider them for my poll. Loyola got votes this week. I did not consider Loyola. They beat Holy Cross this week. They've won four in a row, which gets them to 500. You're never going to guess what Loyola's record is in the Patriot League. It's 4-2. Nobody knows. I don't know if I trust Loyola's defense to get stops yet. I don't know if I trust their offense to be consistent enough to win against big teams right now. They have Navy and Army left. Those are the remaining Patriot League contests. So two really good tests for them before Patriot League tournament. But Loyola got votes. I did not consider voting for Loyola, really. Jacksonville got votes. I thought about voting for Jacksonville. Their recent opponents, not great. Basically, their last three opponents, all wins, but light. They've won 8 of 9, though, and that's meaningful to me. You still got, you know, I know some of their opponents are a little weaker in the A-Sun, but you still got to win the game. And it's not always easy to just go out there and win the game in the A-Sun. Winning 8 of 9 is meaningful. Air Force and Bellarmine remain on the schedule for them. I think the Finns can win the A-Sun. I think they can if they stay hot and roll into the tournament on a winning streak. Be careful. Be careful. Air Force got votes this week. I'll be honest. I didn't really consider Air Force, but I don't think it's crazy to bank them. I don't hate it. Their win streak is 6 in a row. They're unbeaten in A-Sun play. I think putting the top team in a conference right now, after this much body of work, putting them in the top 20, I don't think that's crazy. They still have to play Jacksonville. They haven't played Jacksonville yet, but they have wins over Utah and Bellarmine. Those are good wins. We're talking about other teams that are getting votes here, right? Utah, we'll get to them right now. Utah got votes this week. They beat Mercer. They've won 5 in a row. They've won, like Jacksonville, I think they've won 8 of 9. They are part of what I'd say is in this group of teams that can win the A-Sun. I think you've kind of got this clear group that can do it. With Utah, Jacksonville, Air Force, and you know, maybe you throw Bellarmine in there. But I don't think they're top 20 right now. I didn't really think about them. If I thought about Jacksonville, I should probably say I thought about Utah too. But I don't know. They're kind of right on the outside to me. And that, as they say, is it. That's the top 20. That's the poll. That's everybody who I voted for. That's everybody who got votes in the poll and what I thought about them. So that's our trip through the Tuesday top 20. Spent some time in there this week. Look out for some PLL draft content this week, including, folks, I did it. I can't believe it. I did a mock draft. The mock draft is up. It's live. It's at sticksandlacrosse.com. If you want to know who's going where, I'll give you a little spoiler. In my mock draft, Brendan O'Neill doesn't go first. Now you got to go read it. That's the PLL draft content that's out there now. There will also be, I do this kind of, as you know, I keep the spreadsheet full of records and all that kind of stuff in college lacrosse. At the end of the regular season, I put together a who the best plays were for the money line, who had a great record against the spread, who was great hitting overs, who was great hitting unders, who was bad at those things. And we kind of look at the kind of the teams that were the fun plays throughout the regular season. So that's coming for the college game and for the NLL teams as well. So keep an eye out for that. That's going to be coming soon. Otherwise, thank you again for sticking around with me. And we will see you next time.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.